Hey guys, welcome back to the latest episode of The Business of Cyber. We have another conversation with an incredible founder for you today. Dov Yuran is currently the CEO of Command Zero, a stealth stage security startup. Now, before he and the team founded Command Zero, Dov started and sold ThreatGrid to Cisco in 2014. Now, before we get into the conversation, I want to give a quick thank you and a shout out to Marty Resch for the introduction to Dov and for the fantastic question suggestions. As always, if you're a fan of the show and you have any guests in mind for me, please feel free to get in touch and make some recommendations with me on LinkedIn at the Business of Cyber page. Now, without further ado, I'm excited to hand it over to Dov Yuran from Command Zero.
Well, the party is off to a good start.
Dov, welcome to the show. How's it going today? Thank you so much for joining me.
Nice to meet you. Nice to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, likewise. Well, I'd love to kick off with maybe a little bit about you and your background. So as a way to get us started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found your way into the world of cybersecurity?
Okay. Well, I grew up in about an hour north of New York City, in Westchester, in the burbs. Went to school up in Boston, and then spent a good chunk of time in New York and D.C., and now out in Austin. And, I started off in... I was very much a science person, so I was a chemistry major in college and pre-med, and actually was this close to going to medical school, and like right before matriculating, I decided to go down the consulting path and work for a Big Four or Big Six at the time, and I actually got more involved into cybersecurity a couple different ways. And you know, after a couple of years at a Big Six, I started with a young a young company that was focused on micropayments. And a few months into the tenure, we sort of uncovered quite a bit of fraud going on the platform. And so I just was totally immersed in that in that world for many months. And it also coincided with, you know, me spending time, more time with a couple of my brothers down in D.C. who had started, a cybersecurity company. And so I was learning, you know, nights and some weekends and things of that nature, getting down to D.C. So I kind of approached that a few different angles. That was, you know, really interesting and a lot of fun. And that's kind of the rest is history after those, some of those early days.
Yeah. I guess as a sort of early milestone, maybe not early, but, you know, just sort of critical milestone in your career, I'd love to talk about sort of the journey into entrepreneurship. So how did you come to found ThreatGrid?
Well, it was... So I've always been, I guess, that entrepreneurial bug in our family. You know, my mom started a number of different businesses and projects. And, you know, both of my parents immigrated from Israel. And so, you know, for job and work related activities. And so it's always, and you know, I mentioned my brothers and others. So it's always been something that we've been sort of instilled or thought about from a very young age. So in the professional sense, as my sort of career progressed, after I was part of a young company and we got acquired into Symantec, I then had left and spent a number of years, you know, 4 or 5 years, 6 years at an incubator. So we were constantly helping cyber companies get up and out and into industry. And eventually I met what would become my co-founder, who came to sort of the incubator saying, hey, I've got an idea of a product that would work well in cyber. And so we sort of talked from there and spent a lot of time together since.
Yeah. You mentioned having entrepreneurship as part of just your family culture, if you will, with your parents and, you and your brothers having sort of just entrepreneurialness in your DNA, if you will. I'm curious to sort of hear a little bit more about that in terms of how you think just sort of how you were raised or your childhood shaped how you think about company building.
Well, there was always an emphasis on working around the house and projects. So it was a lot of, hey, here's a project for the summer, here's a project for the week. And there were some pretty interesting projects that they weren't just, here, go mow the lawn. There's, building a rock wall or a fence or a retaining wall and other kinds of things that were maybe a little more aggressive in nature. So that idea of hard work was always instilled of like, hey, you got stuff you got to do. The educational aspect was always emphasized of, hey, important your schoolwork, studying, making sure you're learning. That was always an emphasis in that and sort of how we were brought up. And the other thing is teamwork. I mean, that also maybe it sounds a little corny or old fashioned, but a stepdad and mom and brothers was always like, hey, it's a team. We're a team. We're working on things together. And always, always brought about. And I was also into a lot of sports now, but also growing up and that whole teamwork and discipline and sort of working hard. All those things were also reinstilled in that, embodied in those activities as well. So those like three things were definitely shaped a lot of, a lot of the things that I place importance on.
Yeah.
And so too at work.
Cool. Well, I'd love to maybe dig a little bit more into, not just the story behind ThreatGrid, but what some of the sort of pivotal lessons were that you learned throughout that experience. So, as you reflect on building ThreatGrid and just sort of that experience in your career and in your life, what were some of the maybe most impactful lessons that you learned that have sort of shaped how you think about building businesses today?
I would say, in the early days when I was at a big six, it was consulting. So we'd learn about different businesses and sort of the innards of, how the companies were run and the processes. And I remember there's always a triangle that said, hey, people, process, and technology. And what makes a great business is, all of those clicking and working together in unison. And that was something that was so always like a driving force. And when I was younger, I was always thinking about, hey, it's the synergy of those three things. But especially in startup, it's all about technology and how do you differentiate and make it better and sort of out build a better mousetrap and outsmart, the bigger, slower competitor or sort of things that are not yet thought of. And I was always such a firm believer in the technology. And over my career, it really evolved to thinking about the technology more so to like firmly believing it's all about the people. And it's just very funny how I've evolved my thinking where it's all about the people. Even some of the smaller companies that I've been a part of, where it was even more emphasized on the technology because that was even more of a differentiation, it was always about the people, the right engineers, the right folks on the table, the right team chemistry, because the technology is always going to need to evolve and to improve and adapt. And there's always going to be turns and bumps on the road ahead that's never going to be a smooth, a smooth drive in a startup world. And the folks you have around the table, both in leadership and sort of individual contributors and everyone and that collective experience, it really, really is all about the people that you have, along for the ride that breeds success into the company. So that is, that I've come 180 degrees from sort of young Dove to older Dove and like where how much of an impact that has on the success of a company and the success of an organization.
Yeah, I definitely hear you with that. And, you know, there's people, you know, I've talked to, I've had on the show even where they think kind of the tech is the end all be all, right? And you have a great product, it'll sell itself and everything will, you know, just sort of fall in line behind it. And while obviously that's important, there's other things like people, for example, that may be overlooked or not given an appropriate level of sort of ranking compared to other, you know, variables within the business. So I'm curious to understand that just, you know, as you think about evaluating a company today, whether it's a company you're building yourself or investing in, how do you think about sort of evaluating talent, right? And finding the right people to do the right jobs to build and support a business?
Well, since we are in a technology driven world and cyber is a, you know, a very technology oriented industry, at least most parts of it are, looking at the founding team and making, you know, making sure they have technical chops and skill sets and, you know, experiences, learned experiences or work experiences or other things, sort of like as a table stakes, an important factor. But, you know, the other parts that are extremely important are sort of the founders, of personalities or characteristics. I'm not sure how to quantify it, but like their drivers, like what's important to them, their ability to take initiative and sort of their energy level and follow through and like, hey, they're going to do something and follow up and do something and sort of, you know, taking action on those things. Those kinds of like intangibles are extremely important, you know, as I see like, hey, what's gonna I don't say matter most, but what's gonna kind of push the company, because you know, through thick and thin as you hit different obstacles along the way, there's vision and there's sort of understanding the market and sort of how things are gonna evolve. Those are important too, but I think those are things that other people can help bring to the company, you know, advisors and board members and other sort of influencers. It can sort of help shape and model where it's going. But I think some of that, like, hey, you know, working hard, getting the company moving forward, you know, following through the initiative, you know, helping the team get the job done and their, you know, and you know, sort of whatever task at hand. So I don't know. I'm not sure if that answered the question, but, you know, I sort of drifted a little bit on some thoughts about sort of younger companies and sort of what are important in the founding teams.
I'm curious to hear sort of how you learn this lesson. Like you mentioned, you know, big reflection from the experience with ThreatGrid was the maybe shift in perspective from tech being most important to actually people being most important. So as you think about the process of discovering that, were there situations that made that sort of pronounced in your mind or problems within the business that you notice? I'd just like to understand sort of how you made that discovery.
Yeah, I mean, surprising. I mean, it's never sort of like a perfect, easy road from, you know, A to Z. So as you hit an issue, a challenge, you know, we had, we were essentially a cloud-based technology at scale. You know, we're built in within our own cloud for a variety of reasons. And when a Fortune 1 company said, hey, this is great technology, but we need to deploy this on-prem and, you know, on a server. And guess what? So, you know, working at startup speed of, hey, great technology, yes, but totally evolving the form factor from something that we could touch every day and, you know, evolve as sort of as a SaaS offering to here's an appliance that sits into your environment was a Herculean effort by the team. And it's just kind of like one example. And that sort of immensely helped, you know, the trajectory of our company and sort of validating a lot of things that we were doing you know, addressing a market that we weren't addressing before and being able to evolve our technology into a different computing platform. And that it's just like it sort of the lesson of the people part. Like, you'd have never thought, or yes, it's on a roadmap to get to an appliance eventually, but to, I won't say pivot, but to sort of do that while still running the boat and still evolving the company forward. And there's lots of little nuggets along the way, you know, that influence that thinking of, hey, we got this, you know, we got this as a team, you know, whatever obstacle is going to face us, we're, you know, we're going to tackle it.
Yeah. That inspired another question that, you know, I know a lot of sort of not only guests that I've talked to, but also just audience members as well, who are oftentimes sort of early startup executives. Something they sort of need to find the balance between is acting on sort of a set roadmap that you have and a vision that you have, but also responding to demand and sort of feature requests from customers and prospects. And it's even more telling when, you know, it's a Fortune 1 or a Fortune 5. So how do you think about maintaining that balance of sort of the flexibility and adaptiveness of like listening to customers in the market, but also executing on the vision that you and your leadership team have?
That is a great question. And that is something I find a lot of companies have, you know, a real challenge in answering that, in how they're sort of approaching the market, because you have to have consistency and staying power and focus on sort of what you're building and you know, to a vision, to a mission, right? But you also have to have some flexibility to sort of evolve and adapt that, you know, if it's 5 or 10 degrees or sometimes even more, you know, to address the right market requirements that you may or may not be hitting or addressing, you know, if you're staying on your own. I think a lot of times the bigger challenge is not staying focused enough and sort of bending and catering too much to ideas, to new ideas, and sort of evolving too quickly and not sort of finishing the current idea at hand. And that's something I'm pretty proud of in the companies that I, you know, spend time with and in the companies I'm involved with. I think we do have, and we do strike a good balance between those, you know, soliciting customer feedback, understanding what it is, sort of mapping it out and sort of making sure it's consistent with others, you know, so that Fortune 5 customer wasn't sort of done in unison. I'm sorry, wasn't done in sort of isolation. There were other customers and government and other, you know, partners that were talking about it. But, you know, when someone puts here, you know, here's the check on the table and let's get rolling. You know, when is the right time to make those judgments and when is the right time to make those shifts? And you know, so I think it is a balance, and it's a very subtle sort of gut feel on how often and how wavering versus no, we got to stay the course, because sometimes staying the course and staying exactly focused is what's ultimately going to, you know, get you to the end of the rainbow.
Yeah. So, you know, a little bit sort of broader question now, as you think about sort of the experience with ThreatGrid, what would you, or what are some examples of some things you would do differently if you were to restart the business today?
A couple of things. I think going faster is something that I would do differently in sort of in a new company. It's hiring faster, and I'll say, and firing faster, and I'll sort of caveat that a little bit more. But it's going faster. Like, hey, this is what we're doing. Like lean into something more, you know, use the resources at your disposal and, you know, within your network and sort of teams that you can help build. And if you see that it's a good fit, you know, continue to lean in on that fit and sort of maybe not sort of wait until, you know, the whole scientific method is proven out before adding the next incremental hire. You know, in sort of an analogy of, you know, a scientist. But but conversely, you know, if it's not a great fit on the team, you know, from the individual, you know, I've learned a lot more. Like, hey, we've spent so much time and energy of saying, hey, yes, this person's really, really good, but it's not clicking within the environment, whether it's the team chemistry or how the team works, or hours within the company, or the exact specialization of that individual versus what he's doing or needs to do, or a variety of things. I've also learned that there's just so many talented people, and even talented people that you say, hey, listen, you're great, and think the world of you, but it's just not the right fit because there's various reasons A, B, C that it's not clicking. And you'll be successful in another place. It's almost like you're holding someone back if you're force fitting them into something that they're not excelling in. And so for both the company standpoint and from the individual standpoint, to get to that decision faster, I think is something that without, both in the hires and the fires, to move it quicker, I think is more impactful and something that I try to think about more, and like some of the mistakes that I try to be more conscious of as I go back in the startup world.
Yeah. You've alluded to a few points that I think are, pretty prevalent where, someone's just not a good fit for a role, but certain parts of what they do maybe are, they're good at, right? And maybe they're a likable person, but in other parts, it's just not a good fit. So it's, this sort of thing where it's a difficult situation, but the person may be better fit just being somewhere else.
That's exactly it. Listen, if the person came into the company in the first place, they're obviously super talented. They're super smart. They've got a lot. There's a lot going on there, but sometimes personalities don't work or other things, but that's exactly right. I mean, you don't want to hold the person back because they can achieve success, better success somewhere else. And it's the same sort of for the company standpoint. Like, hey, if it's not the perfect fit or a great fit, that happens sometimes. And I just really think it's to everybody's benefit to try to see those things out, sooner than later. And it's more impactful earlier on in the company, the first X number of hires than it is, when you're a much bigger entity that already has its own momentum, so to speak.
I'm curious just on this point with kind of hiring and management and just broader, just personnel type evaluations and decisions like this. I know for me personally, I moved into my first sort of formal leadership role like a year and a half ago now. And I've done some things well, but also made a bunch of mistakes and learned a ton in terms of hiring people, firing people, having tough conversations about performance, those sorts of things. So I'm curious sort of as you reflect on, whether it was at ThreatGrid or other sort of leadership opportunities, what were some mistakes you made, but mistakes you're sort of glad happened because of the lessons you learned as a result of them?
I think everybody has that, challenge as they're maturing or progressing through their career. For me, getting into the details of certain things, and sort of making sure they're done right, right according to you, versus, enabling others to influence and progress that project forward. That to me has been something that I've worked on and I've evolved over the years. So I'm very conscious of being more of, empowering and enabling, every, team members, leaders, also all facets in the company. They're here, everyone plays a part in that role to encourage and foster the environment for those individual contributors and leaders, to have impact on the business. And yes, question and ask things, sort of how did you come to a conclusion and sort of how these elements are pulled together. But they're there and hired and in the role for a reason. We trust them. And we want their expertise, and they're better than me in a lot of different aspects. So I want them to feel encouraged and empowered to, to make those kind of decisions to evolve and to push the company forward. And without me sort of, yes, the right level of skepticism depending on the product or project at hand or question at hand. But that's something that I, you know, try to lean in on, you know, as much as possible, and trusting, you know, my co-founders, my leaders, and other members in the team, that, you know, they're there to help push that forward, and trusting their experiences, and, you know, that they're making their, you know, the right decisions.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, I'd love to maybe pivot a little bit and talk about some of the work you're doing today. So maybe as sort of an open-ended question to like pivot a bit here, I'd love to hear your point of view on sort of how company building today is different than when you started ThreatGrid. So could you kind of open us up there and just maybe share your point of view on those differences?
Yeah, it's funny just kind of thinking about that. It's like, strangely enough, I think things might have come full circle from sort of when I started ThreatGrid to sort of where we are today. You know, there's a whole, you know, and in between, I'd say, let me take a step back. So ThreatGrid and sort of what I think what's sort of in vogue today is like fundamentally, you know, building a fundamentally sound company, you know, being conscious of the spend, of the hire, of the plan, you know, building, you know, with focus on sort of the customers we're going after and what we're building as a product, versus, you know, sort of what happened, you know, between, I'll call it the beginning of ThreatGrid and where we are today. I think that style is sort of back in vogue, but, you know, dialing back a few years, you know, it was raise as much money as possible, throw money at the problem, make a lot of noise, you know, bring a lot of attention to a problem without, you know, necessarily having the problem fully or the solution fully baked, just to get and go as quickly as possible. And I, you know, that makes sense in certain markets, right? You know, the cost of capital was very cheap a few years ago. Now it's much more expensive. So having and being much more conscious and prudent in how you spend it. You know, so that latter model or the bookends from 10 years ago or till now of being more thoughtful and conscious of how you're building a company, you know, versus just throwing everything in the kitchen sink because, you know, iterate and go as quickly as possible on everything. I think those are like the sort of two stark differences, you know, and sort of how things have evolved and then evolved full circle to come back, you know, to sort of the roots in the beginning.
And I know you are, as well as, you know, the rest of your team, sort of in the process of building a stealth stage company. So I'm curious to maybe hear as much about that as like you're, you know, open to discussing.
Yeah.
And just sort of more broadly, like, what are you hoping to accomplish behind the scenes, or maybe see proven behind the scenes before you, you know, unveil it publicly?
Yeah. So, you know, doing it, you know, not doing it for the first time, you know, doing it, you know, doing it again, it kind of, it almost gives you the, it's a luxury that you understand sort of the road that you're going to travel. And so that it's not as stressful, you know, when you meet the obstacles that are undoubtedly going to come and to any startup that's, you know, in, you know, living its journey and living it and moving forward, from, you know, the two co-founders that I work with and sort of, you know, having great leadership around, you know, so that whole core and group, it is. It's great, you know, that we have so much experience in and around, you know, the security industry and startup experience, that makes it a lot easier in some extent. What we're trying to build and what I want to do, I mean, at a high level, we're looking at the investigation space, you know, and how we can better bring, simplification to it and really, better empowerment of, you know, investigators in sort of understanding an incident and coming to a conclusion faster. And so, One of the things that I find, easier, I keep saying that, but more peace of mind in our approach is that, because it's not easier, but it's, having enough for, thinking ahead of like, okay, we don't want to come out half baked, mm-hmm. right? So having a sense of maturity, yes, it's going to take a little bit longer, but making sure we're pulling something together that's going to be, having real value and having impact for a customer. And so being thoughtful and patient and non-patient in some ways, but patient in, hey, let's do the right market research. Let's get the right number, of customer requirements in. Let's sort of get a big whiteboard of all the things and all of sort of the requirements and customer asks. And being able to do that sort of in a judicious way and marrying that closely with engineering so that, yes, we'll be quieter for a little bit longer, but, we think we're going to hit a much stronger target and a much stronger sort of solution because of the extra patience that we have, to kind of see this through versus, a public company, a quarterly driven company, or someone that sort of has a much shorter attention span and time horizon and how they're thinking and acting on building some innovation.
And do you guys have like a specific threshold that you want to hit before you're ready to launch publicly, or is it more like less clearly defined than that?
We have some internal metrics, but in a broader sense, it is more around, and stealth, because, there's no making noise for the sake of making noise is just, wasting everybody's time, your sure. time, the customer's time, the industry in general. So having the product that's more fire tested, scale tested, that's more, usable, sort of much more sort of enriched design partner feedback into it. I think all those kinds of things, getting on the other side of that sort of real scale test, real customer usage test to say, hey, now we can start talking about it. Now we can start, bringing more attention to this, when we have something that works versus trying to do that at the same time, which is a lot of startups do. Hey, let's bring attention and let's get partners and customers and try to do all things at once. While they're still baking the product, I think having sort of that initial, product, and again, the product evolves incredibly fast, especially in today's day and age of cloud computing and virtualization and sort of how fast things can move. You're never stagnant, but sort of that initial concept of, the fundamentals of the platform pulled together is something we want to be, more baked than we had been in the past, maybe.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, I'd love to pivot a bit into the rapid fire round, which basic premise here is I ask you a few quick questions and you share whatever comes top of mind. Sound good?
Sure thing.
All right.
Sure thing, Alex.
Yeah. So first question, what's your favorite book?
Favorite book. I got a couple, Unbroken and The Power of One. And love this. It's an awesome story. Blew my mind, and like the perseverance that those folks demonstrated in those books was crazy. Mind-boggling.
Just because of what's hanging behind you, I have to ask, what's your favorite Steve McQueen movie?
It is an old school. Steve McQueen is my stepdad. He reminds me a lot of him. So, yes. Now your Cool Hand Luke, I guess, would be the one that comes to mind. Just to, it's a rapid fire, so I won't go into too much detail on that one.
Yeah, cool. All right, pivoting a little bit now. What are your most and your least favorite things about the InfoSec industry?
Least favorite. I'll do a couple of those. There's so much Me Too. There's so much marketing fluff and BS that's thrown out there that's and FUD and noise. It's just hard to distinguish one thing to another. That is, you know, a huge pet peeve in just how our industry's evolved. Most favorite part, there's a couple on that. I think it's really interesting how it evolves and how it's constantly attacking, breaking cat and mouse game and catch up, you know, between the adversaries and the adversary and the good guy. I think it's also interesting, or one of the favorite parts is, you know, reputational brand makes a big difference of, hey, you know, saying what you do, doing what you say, you know, I think that's a pretty cool thing that, you know, you know people after a while and sort of what they've done, what they've accomplished, sort of get a sense of trust from them. I think that's sort of like a universal thing across, you know, across the industry from vendors and from, you know, CISOs and practitioners alike.
Yeah, cool. Next question. I'm always curious whenever I chat with successful entrepreneurs to understand what keeps you motivated. You know, especially after you've been a part of, you know, a few successful businesses and now you're sort of starting from scratch with another one. What is it that sort of motivates you to keep doing this?
It's building an awesome company with an awesome team, and even further, it's like building an awesome product, like bringing something from nothing, you know, a piece of clay and shaping it in and saying, wow, here's something of value. Here's like a benefit, and seeing like a customer take it, use it, and make his life easier or her life more powerful. That's such an awesome thing. And like all of like the effort you put into it and sort of getting to that point where they're seeing that. I mean, it's very hard to describe. It's such a satisfying, gratifying, you know, moment in time. And yeah, building that company and building that out for a customer is just a great feeling.
Yeah. Very good. And the last question is, if you could go back in time and get a drink with your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give him?
You know, maybe it's corny, but doing something that you're passionate about, you know, for me, cyber and the industry, it's just, I'm so involved in it. It's super interesting. And the subject matter and the personalities that are involved and sort of what we do day to day. I would continue on that. Like, hey, something you're passionate about, something you like, you know, not for the money or other sort of outcomes. And then things, you know, common sense, continue to work hard, continue to bust your ass, continue to, you know, do good things and good things will be happen to, you know, good things will happen to you. So, and also, you know, part of the reason why I still do it is, you know, the harder you work at something, the more gratifying it is when there is a successful outcome, you know, at the end of the day or the end of the year or end of whenever the end is.
Cool. Very good, Duff. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. I really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a great time.